going on, everybody, and welcome to episode 42 of the Mental Dive Podcast, where we talk anything and everything sports psychology and mental performance. I'm your host, Taylor Staden. Let's talk about fear, that four-letter word, F-E-A-R, fear. Now, I'm going to pick on hockey players for a second, because this is where I can relate the best. Hockey players. How many times have you dumped the puck in the neutral zone, because you were afraid of turning the puck over? If any of you say never, you're lying. That's as simple as that. We've all been there, and that's okay. But why do we play in fear? Why is it that we panic sometimes and we decide to play it safe? Well, we do that oftentimes, more than not, because we are afraid of making mistakes. Perhaps you're worried about what your teammates are going to say if you make a bad play. Perhaps you are worried about getting benched or losing your spot on the team. Maybe you don't want to hear about it during the car ride home with your parents. We've all been there with the post-game talks. But whatever the reason, when we play in fear, it really limits our potential because we play it safe. We're not playing to be the best we can be or to realize our full potential, but rather we're playing just to get by, just to do things that aren't going to get us very noticed, per se. And when we do this, it over time, it really just causes us to be complacent because we're not willing to take the necessary risks for us to reach our full potential, for us to get those outcomes we want. How do you ever expect to score more goals or get more assists or more opportunities in the offensive zone if you always play it safe and you always dump the puck in? Granted, there are times where maybe dumping the puck in is the right play, but if we are not willing to take those calculated risks, then we're not going to get better. So what does fear feel like? You know, like think about a time where maybe you were playing really scared. Maybe your heart rate went really high. Maybe your vision really narrowed. You got sweaty palms, whatever it may have been. These are all responses that our body is eliciting in order for us to take on a challenge. So our body is really just trying to help us. But the important factor here is how we interpret these emotions. So if we interpret these responses as us getting really, really nervous and something that's going to bring us down, then it's a lot more likely to bring us down. But if we view these emotions as something that is going to help us get the outcomes we want and to help us get into our zone, then they're a lot more likely to excite us and ultimately, like I said, help us get to where we want to be. So now, how do we improve? How do we learn to perform when fear is looming and when fear is present? So really, it's about taking those small steps outside of your comfort zone. So working towards learning how to still play that assertive game when maybe you feel like in the moment it would make you feel better to just dump the puck in. So what I challenge you listeners to do is I want you to make a conscious effort to do one thing every day that is outside of your comfort zone. It doesn't have to be a major risk. It doesn't have to be anything super flamboyant, but even if it's just something really small, and just continue to build on that. And this will help you build your confidence to be able to do things that aren't always comfortable in the moment and just feel good in the moment. So if anybody does begin to do things on a daily basis that are outside of their comfort zone with conscious effort, I'd love to hear about it. You can post about it on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Tag me at Taylor Staden, at TaylorStaden. I'd love to hear about it. But anyways, thank you for listening to my little spiel on playing it safe, comfort zones, you name it. Now let's actually shift into why you're probably really here is for the awesome interview I had with KHL forward Ryan Spooner. So throughout the course of the podcast with Ryan, we had a great conversation and we touched on a lot of topics. One of them being understanding that you have to use your talent and not be too afraid to use it, especially when you get to those higher levels. So you got to play the way that got you to where you are. And on top of this now, we also talked a lot about his experiences getting drafted to the NHL, getting traded at the NHL trade deadline in a deal to bring Rick Nash to the Boston Bruins, as well as just his perspectives on the mental side of hockey and learning from adversity. So I hope you all really enjoy the interview, and I'd love to hear any feedback you have. So without further ado, let's get into the podcast. So today's guest has played a total of 534 professional hockey games, including 325 NHL games, accumulating 48 goals and 167 points over seven different NHL seasons. Currently he's playing in the KHL with Minsk Dynamo, leading his team with 16 points in 14 games. Hailing from Ottawa, Ontario, Ryan Spooner. How are you doing today?
I'm great. And how are you?
Good, good, man. I can't really complain. The weather's been really nice in Greece. It's definitely a nice change from the Novembers I'm used to in Ontario. So can't really complain too much.
I'm jealous. It's a great spot to be. I've been there twice and it's lovely.
Oh, yeah. We actually had a national lockdown start the other day. So can't enjoy it as much as I did before, but it's definitely nice. Yeah. Like I said, beat Sudbury, Ontario, where I went to school. So.
Okay. You get some sun there too, which I'm assuming it's sunny there now, no?
Yeah, it's nice and sunny now. I went for a walk this morning, a bit of a cool breeze, but no, it's good. So how have you been lately with the pandemic and last couple of years been playing in Belarus? How's everything over there?
Things are completely normal here. Nothing's really shut down. They're just having some political, I guess, issues in the country now, which is, you know, just being from Canada, something that I'm not really used to kind of seeing. So that's been a little bit different. But in terms of all like the COVID stuff, I haven't really had to deal with it because as soon as I moved here, it's been normal life. Nothing's really closed. Nothing's really shut down. So our team actually just got sick. I had COVID, I think it was like 3 weeks ago. So I'm just kind of coming off the recovery period and stuff, but I'm fine now. My health is fine and I'm back at it. So it's good.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're doing better after that. I'm sure that was a bit of a scary time, no doubt.
Yeah, it wasn't, I didn't really get that sick. I just felt really tired, like a headache and stuff for like 4 or 5 days. And my breathing was a little so-so, but for the most part, it was just like a cold, but it can be different for everybody. So I guess I just got lucky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So one thing I always like to do with the podcast, Ryan, is I like to always take a big step back and talk about your story. What got you involved in hockey? What's your why? And really, what makes you put up with the hits from behind and, you know, all the adversities that come with hockey?
I played minor hockey till I was 16. I only played at the highest level my last year, which was my draft year to the OHL. My parents, you know, they were a huge part of me, I guess, getting into hockey. My dad was the one that played hockey at a young age, and he played his entire life, and he wanted me to play. And he's probably the person I look up to, I guess, the most. You know, he's always been the guy that taught me to play and always the one that kind of coached me and stuff. So I think a lot of the credit that I can give to my career is definitely going to come from him. So he was very positive with me my entire career, and he still is. Never got really mad at me, which I think is an important thing, you know. He wasn't too hard on me and stuff like that. So that was definitely good. And then when I went to play in the OHL, I played for the Peterborough Petes, Kingston Frontenacs, and the Sarnia Sting. And then I got drafted to the Bruins, played in Providence for a bit. In terms of my passion for hockey, it's just it's something that I've always done. It's kind of the only life that I know. As far as that I can remember, it was going to school, coming home, doing my homework, going to the rink and seeing my friends. And I think for me, more than anything, I'm like a social guy. I like going to the rink. I like seeing the guys in the team. I like being a part of the team. It makes me feel important. And I have fun with it. So I enjoy playing the game. I've had some years where I haven't enjoyed it as much, some ups and downs, but that's just normal. That's just life in general. So for me, putting up with all the mental stuff that has to do with hockey, all the mind games, all that kind of stuff, getting hit in the face with pucks, blocking shots, getting hit from behind. For me, those are just kind of temporary setbacks and temporary pain. But for the most part, 95% of my career has been things that I've had fun doing, meeting great people, living in cities that I've enjoyed. So the pros outweigh the cons by a lot. So that's kind of just where my head's at.
One thing that you said that really stuck out to me was how you didn't play AAA until your draft year. So did you play AA growing up?
Yeah, we didn't have the AAA leagues. We only formed it the last year. So when we went to the Toronto tournaments and stuff like that, we had a hard time because our area that we could select from was very, very tiny. So when we went to Toronto, we'd get smoked by the Toronto teams and the Montreal teams and stuff. So my last year that I played though in midget, we formed together with two other teams and we made a AAA team. And our team was a lot more competitive. So that was definitely good.
Okay. It reminds me a lot of Jack Quinn, you know, recently drafted by the Sabres, where he played AA all up until his draft year, played AAA, and next thing you know, he's a top 10 pick in the NHL draft. So I think that's something that's really important to touch on when it comes to minor hockey, is that you don't have to play AAA when you're 10 years old to make the NHL. Sometimes it's better for you to play a lower level because you're going to get more ice time and opportunities instead of not really getting to develop on the lower lines.
I think it depends too on what type of player you are and stuff like that. Like for a lot of people, I would say that if you're playing on the AAA team, you're getting a lot of ice time, you're one of the better players. That's great. But then if you're not playing as much and you're not playing power play and you're not on the penalty kill and stuff, but then you went down to the AA league and you were on the first power play unit and playing more, that's probably more beneficial for you growing as a player when you're younger. As you get older, you have to fit into a role and it becomes more of a job. But when you're younger and you're like 9, 10, 11, 12, I think playing on a team where you get the most ice time to kind of develop yourself as a player. I know that when I was younger, it was all about, we would just like roll the lines for the most part, but I think hockey's getting a little bit more serious nowadays. Mm. But yeah, I'd say that the most important thing when you're that age though, is you just have to have fun. If you're going to the rink and you're having fun, you're meeting friends and all that kind of stuff and you're having a good time, that's the most important part. Secondary comes the hockey, and if you're happy and you're having a good time, that's just going to come in a natural way. So I think that's kind of what people need to realize, is that when you're of that age, like I don't even remember taking hockey that serious until I was like 20, 18, 19, 20. I just went to the rink. I had fun with my friends. I was happy to see them. My parents never said a single word to me about like, oh, like you didn't play a good game, or this game wasn't good, or you have to do better. They just let me go play and have fun and be a kid. And that's the mentality that I'm going to have if I have a kid that plays hockey. And that's the mentality that I think is the best one. So,
Yeah, absolutely. So as you reflect on your career, like you said, you started with Boston, you were drafted in the second round. What was that whole kind of first few years like, you know, bounce between the AHL and the NHL, trying to get your feet set per se?
I think if I look back at my career now, I think like one of my favorite years I had was my first year playing in the American League. Our team was extremely good. I played a lot. I was a young kid. I was 20. And I came from playing junior hockey. And I think it was important for me to, like, not take the step all the way up to the NHL, but kind of, like, learn as, like, a young guy, get to know what it's like to play with guys that are 30, 31, 32, kind of get used to that culture. And just enjoy being a kid, but enjoy playing hockey, because I even remember my first year playing the American League, I didn't put a lot of pressure. I just went out and played and I had fun. And I was being a kid and I was doing stuff that kids do. Like I took hockey seriously, but I also had fun too. And I think that for me that worked because I'm a social guy and I kind of need that part of my life. But then, you know, I got called up for 4 games and once I got up to the NHL, I had to take things a lot more seriously. And then once my career, kind of kicked off, then that's when I had to be a lot more serious about stuff. But my first year playing the American League, I was just there playing, just having fun. I was also serious, but it was a good blend of both. So.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think that fine line is once you get to the pro level between having fun and also taking it seriously?
Summer times, like you have to be in the gym a lot, you have to eat right, but you also need to be a kid. You need to remember that you're 21, you're 22. That includes if you want to go to parties, you know, that includes your friends. If you want to go out drinking, it's all in kind of, you just have to be moderate about it. You have to be smarter, once a month, you know, or something like that. You still have to have your fun though. You still have to be a kid. Like, if you're too serious all the time, every person I've played with that is too serious all the time, unless you're like an elite player, they kind of just weed themselves out. Like they slowly start to fall out. They get frustrated. They get, discouraged. And you can tell that they're having no fun away from hockey. Their entire life, their entire mindset is just about making it to the NHL, and they stress themselves out. You have to find a good balance for you, and it's different for everybody. So,
mm-hmm. It's funny when you mentioned athletes that take it too seriously all the time. Right away, I thought about Jonathan Toews, but then you said the ones who aren't elite. So I'm like, okay, maybe not Taser, but
there's certain guys that play hockey. It's like they were born to be a hockey player. Like they eat, breathe, and sleep hockey. And those guys are the Connor McDavids, the Crosbys, the Tays. Those guys are like examples of being a perfect pro. Their entire life is about playing hockey. And they're extremely gifted. And they're examples for guys like me to follow. And I look up to guys like that. I say, that's what I strive to be. Not everybody has the capability of basically committing themselves 100% your entire life. Every summer, every waking moment, every day is about hockey. Some people don't have that in them. I know that I didn't have that in me when I was in the NHL. I gave the best that I could. When I look back at my career, there's things that I wish I did a little bit differently. I don't think that I could ever be that guy who was like 100% eat, breathe, sleep hockey all the time, all year for 12 straight years. That's probably why I'm here playing now and not there. If I got a second chance, I would do my best to do that. But that's why I'm saying that it's different for each person. It depends on your personality. It depends on how you are as a person. So it's about finding what works for you to be successful. And I found that balance when I played and I had a successful career and I still am here playing and I'm doing well. So I have found that balance that works for me. There's some guys that never figure out that balance. But for the guys that are at the top of the league, they're just different. Like they're just, they're in a different class than most people. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think as well, it can be very dangerous to have your whole identity and your whole life revolved around one thing. Because suddenly, let's say if you have a career-ending injury or something goes wrong with that sport, suddenly everything in your life is thrown off by that. So I think one thing that I'm big on is I think it's really healthy to have other hobbies and other interests just so you can like recharge it. So then that way, when you come back to hockey mode, you can dial in more.
Yeah.
But that's just my
perspective. Yeah, and I'm not saying that those guys don't have lives away from hockey. They for sure do. I don't know them well enough to know. But I just know that their number one focus all the time is about being the best player that they can be, and they're very committed to it. And that's why they're as good as they are, right? So, but yeah, no, I think it's important to have stuff away from hockey, have some dreams besides hockey. Like I know for me, like I'm always thinking about what I'm going to be doing when I'm done playing the sport, a career that I'm going to have, a future that I'm going to have. And that's just kind of how I deal with things. There's some people that don't think about that until they're done playing. And then they're like, now what am I going to do? So I think it's important. I'm always thinking about things that I can do when I'm done, the interests I have, the passions I have. So, yeah.
Yeah. What could you see yourself doing after hockey?
I want to be a finance guy, or maybe a player agent, a restaurant owner, because I like being around people and socializing and stuff. I have a lot of ideas in terms of finance. I've been taking some of my courses now to get certified for all that stuff. And it's a passion that I have. I like to help out people. Wouldn't mind coaching for a couple of years, maybe. There's a lot of ideas going on in my brain, but I always think about stuff that I could do when I'm done. So.
Cool. I was going to say maybe go relive some experiences in Kingston and take some courses at Queens for finance.
I was actually thinking about when I retire, I wouldn't mind being the coach for the Frontenacs, even an assistant coach, and then working my way up to be the head coach. But I actually liked it there. I liked the city and stuff, and I think I would be a pretty decent coach. I have the experience, and I like to help out. And I think just based on all the coaches I've had, all the players that I know, we all talk about the coaches we like and the coaches we hate and the qualities that we hate in a coach and stuff. So I think I know what players want in a coach, and I think I know how to be that. So it's definitely something that I could consider when I'm done.
Unfortunately, all good things have to come to an end, and you found yourself getting traded at the trade deadline to the New York Rangers to bring Rick Nash to Boston. What was that experience like, being a part of a true cup contender for a whole year and then getting traded to a non-contending team?
Yeah, I wasn't expected to actually get traded. That was the first year that I didn't hear a single rumor about me being traded. All the other years I heard about how I was going to get traded here or there. And then the one year that I thought I was safe, I ended up getting traded. And I was having a fun year. I was playing with Krejci and DeBrusk. I played a couple games with Bergeron, Marchand. I was on the first power play unit. The team was doing well. I was feeling good about where I was at. I was close with a lot of guys on the team. So when I found out that I got traded, I was upset. I was caught off guard, upset. And it was just a change that just happens in a day. I went from having my whole life in Boston thinking that I was going to be there to being traded. And it was kind of like there was just not a great time. But I was thankful that I got traded to the Rangers. I was excited to go there and play. I just needed to wrap my head around the whole fact that I wasn't going to be on the Bruins anymore. And that happened pretty quickly because I actually got traded and played the same night. I had to take a flight and go in and play the same night. And my experience there with the Rangers, it was good. The team, we traded away, I think, 7 or 8 guys, and the coach kind of knew that he wasn't going to be back. So it was kind of a weird vibe at the rink, but I ended up playing 20 games there. I had 16 points, and I played well, and I signed a deal for the following year, and then that's kind of when things tailed off for me. But yeah, I'd say that was a point in my career where I was in a good spot, and then I kind of had a hard time refocusing after I got traded. I was happy in Boston, and then when I got traded, things kind of fell off for me from there. So,
right. So you talk about how you had a really strong finish after you got traded from Boston, 16 points in 20 games. Do you think that was a matter of increased opportunity because you found yourself playing up in the lineup? Or were you trying to maybe channel some of that frustration from being traded from the Boston Bruins?
I just think it was the fact that I was playing. I was on the I don't remember if I was in the first power play or the second power play unit, but I remember I was playing like 16 to 20 minutes a night. And historically speaking, my entire career, like I've always been able to put up points. It's just a matter of if I have a coach that wants to play me or not. I've always been in – when I played in the NHL, I was always a 50-point guy. When I got the opportunity to play American League, I was always able to put up roughly a point per game. In the KHL, the same thing. And when I got traded to the Rangers, I just had a coach there that didn't say much to me. He let me play. He let me play the game that I was good at. And I was playing with some players that were extremely good. I was playing with Hayes and I think Fast at the time. And our line was actually, we were clicking there pretty good. So it's hard to produce as a player when you're not playing. And especially when you're somebody like me who I need to be given the opportunity to be an offensive guy. If I'm not giving that chance, then I'm not going to be as effective as I can be. I'm not really a fourth line guy. Maybe in today's NHL, it's a little bit different, but you just don't get the, you don't get the touches. You don't get the minutes to produce. And when I'm not really producing, I'm not going to be as good as like somebody who can fight and hit a lot and use a bigger body. That's just not me. So I need to be put into a kind of a position where I can play to my strengths. And I think when I went to the Rangers, I think the coach kind of did that. So it was good.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you touched on such an important topic there about the whole idea of, you know, role acceptance and, you know, where you fit in the lineup, because I feel like so many players, you look at players who do well in the American League and they're scoring a lot of points and they're getting those touches and they're in those scoring roles, but they come to the NHL and suddenly they're expected to be a checker or, you know, fight and hit. Maybe that's not their game. And then so many people wonder why certain players can't translate their successes from the AHL to the NHL.
It's honestly very simple. Like a lot of people that think that way, they think too kind of linear. Like they need to think more like this kid's been playing the same role in college hockey on the first power play. You know, he's been the go-to guy. He's been the guy that gets all the touches, goes to the American League. He's scoring a lot of goals. He's getting a lot of points. He's playing a lot. He's playing with guys that are skilled. And then you totally switch it up and bring him up and say, oh, okay, we don't need you to score anymore. We just need you to check and we need you to play hard. And we need you. That's hard for a guy to switch. You've been doing one thing that you're good at for 7 or 8 years in junior hockey and college and blah, blah, blah. And then basically it's just like, okay, now you have to switch and play a totally different role. And of course, like, I wouldn't care about doing that. I just want to be playing and helping the team out. But people need to understand that I'm not going to be the best player that I can be, and I'm not going to be able to produce. People always look at your past and say, oh, well, he had 60 points in American League, 35 points in college, but now he's not scoring. It's like, well, look a little bit deeper. Who's he playing with? How many minutes is he playing? Is he on the first power play unit? Where was he playing before? You need to think about more than just looking at his stats, because the stats can be very deceiving. Like my last year, like I've always been able to put up points. And then I had some coaches that didn't play me on the power play units. I played 7 minutes a night and I had like 9 points in 52 games or something. I don't even remember, but like, that's all based on the opportunity that you're given. And any player that plays in the NHL, they all have skill. They can all kind of produce, but not everybody's going to get the chance to be able to do that. Right. So I don't think it's fair to get mad at kids who were kind of producing and then they get put into a different role and people are like, oh, he's a bust or he's not good. Like, you just have to look at the position he's in and all that other kind of stuff. So it's a lot more goes into it than fans think. And there's a lot more behind the scenes that kind of goes on. So it's, yeah, it's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's why some people work in the NHL and some just are stuck looking at hockey DB. So I guess that's where the difference lies there.
Yeah, no, you'd actually be totally shocked. Like, even some of the coaches I've had, they're like, why aren't you producing? And I'm like, well, I went from being on the first power play unit with the Bruins, playing on the second line, to now being on the fourth line. No offense to the guys that I was playing with, but their game was more so checking. My game was always more of like a skill game. So, like, clearly when you're put into that role, you're not going to be the offensive guy that you were before. And I've had coaches that are like, why aren't you the offensive guy that you were before? And I tried to explain to them and they just didn't get it. They're like, oh, well, you should be scoring. And I'm like, okay. And I would always try to, but you'd be surprised that a lot of people think that way, and it's not just fans. There's some fans that are really smart. There's some fans that don't really think about that kind of stuff. But you'd be surprised that there's a lot of people that are high up in hockey everywhere, minor hockey in the OHL, NHL, the American League, KHL. They just look at your stat line and they don't look at what else is kind of going on. And that's the sad truth about stuff, but it's just kind of the reality of the sports world. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a bit about the 18-19 season since you just touched on it a bit. So like we said, you finished off strong with the Rangers the season before. Next season, you find yourself maybe off to a bit of a slower start and you're transitioning to a bunch of different teams. How about we just, could you take me through that year and just kind of where everything was at for you?
Yeah, so I showed up to camp, and they when I got to the Rangers, they thought that I wasn't in the best shape that I could have been. I wasn't definitely in the best shape that I could have been. I wasn't in terrible shape, but for the start of the season, I was in the shape that they wanted me to be in. So things were fine with that, but that kind of didn't sit well with them. So I was kind of behind the eight ball to start there. So it was I think that's kind of where things started. They thought that I would have came into camp in the best shape of my life. That is kind of a regret that I have. I definitely should have done that. If I got a second chance to go back to the NHL, I would make sure that I did that. But that's in the past now, and I've learned from it. And I ended up getting traded, I think, because of that. And then the whole rest of the year was kind of a bit of a, I guess, a disaster, you can say. People talk and people were saying that I show up in camp and I wasn't in great shape and all this other kind of stuff. I did fine in all my testing and stuff, but once that word kind of gets out about you, it's kind of hard to get it back, right? So the rest of the year, I played for coaches that didn't really want to play me, how I was used with the Bruins and stuff or with the Rangers at the end of the year. And I was used in more of a checking role, playing like under 10 minutes a night. Sporadically, I'd play like a little bit more, but when you're not playing a lot, it's hard to get into the rhythm and stuff. A lot of that year, a lot of it falls on my shoulders by not being as prepared as I could have been to start the year. But also, that being said, for a player like me, like people kind of knew where I played with the Bruins and how they had to play me to be successful and stuff. And I just wasn't putting into that spot. And I tried the best I could, but it wasn't good enough. So I kept on getting moved around. And then when I went to the Canucks, actually, I thought that I played well there for the first 4 or 5 games. I played on the top line with Pettersson and Besser. We played well. We had a lot of chances. And then I ended up getting bought out because they had to take back a contract from somebody. I don't even remember the specifics, but and now here I am, and I'm in the KHL, and I'm having a good time, and I'm playing a lot, and I'm having fun. And that season wasn't a fun season for me. It was hard to get through the season mentally. It was very depressing. But that being said, when I look back on it now, I think that's the kind of season where it builds character, it builds strength, and I think that I got better from it. So I'm not going to sit here and be like, it was a terrible year. I just like to look at the positives and say, yeah, next time if I get a chance or whatever happens, I need to be 100% prepared for it. Life's all about, I guess, lessons, and that's a lesson that I learned. And there's a lot of lessons from that year that I think is going to make me better off as a person. And that's just kind of my viewpoint on the whole season. So.
No, absolutely. And it's incredible how much our perspectives can change on adversities as we give ourselves time to properly reflect and really learn from it, like you said. Because I'm sure in the moment you might look back and say, you know, not even a season ago, I was a key piece to bring Rick Nash to Boston, and now I'm being moved around and not being given opportunity. How did that maybe impact your confidence, you know, just like the whole whirlwind of events over the last few seasons at that time?
As soon as that season was done, I was always the first person to blame, like, oh, it was the coach's fault that I didn't play well, or the GM's fault, or this person's fault. But at the end of the day, I kind of did it to myself because I showed up in camp not in the shape that they were expecting. So that's on me to start the season. That being said, I don't think that I was put into the positions to make myself the most successful. But that all started off with because I didn't do the best job that I could have done, right? So I needed to be better and I wasn't. And that's kind of just the way it is. And in terms of the confidence piece, yeah, it definitely makes you question yourself as a player. And then you're reading the social media and everybody's ripping you, saying you suck and all this stuff. And I've always been the type of person though, where like that stuff doesn't really bug me. You have to have a thick skin to play hockey. People are always going to say stuff about you. Take it with a grain of salt, move on, just go back to playing your game. That whole season was so blurry. Like I remember bits and pieces of it, but like it was just such a weird year that looking back on it, it just seems like a bad dream, and now it's over with and I learned all the lessons that I had to learn. And I was, I guess, thankful that I got to live in some cities, like Vancouver and New York and stuff like that. It was nice to experience all that. And I got to meet a lot of guys, that I enjoyed playing with. So, just look at the positives.
Mm-hmm. You know, as you look at your NHL career, you got to play with some incredible players. You know, the best of the best, Connor McDavid, Dreisaitl, Pasternak, I could go on. Is there perhaps one thing that you noticed about the elite players you've played with that make them elite? Like, is there a common denominator there?
Honestly, yes and no. I feel like a lot of them are just born with like a natural gift. They just have the, it's almost like their brain thinks a step ahead of the rest of us, right? Like they make plays that you wouldn't even think about making, like passes that you're like, I would consider myself to be a good passer. That's always what I've been good at. And then you go and you see guys like Kane and Dreisaitl and McDavid. They make plays that like normal people just don't see. It's hard to explain. And then even in practice, they make all the little things look so easy. Even like a rimmed puck that the average player has a hard time getting, or like a puck that's in the air, they can just grab it with their stick and go. They make all the subtly hard things in hockey look extremely easy. It's like they were just born to play. They just think the game faster. They're smarter. It's not that they're necessarily faster and stronger. It's just their brain and the way that they think the game is just superior to the rest. And that's just what separates them. I don't have the answers for you on why that is. I just think that it's just the talent, just the skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny. So you look at a guy like McDavid who doesn't just perhaps think the game faster, but he's also miles faster than just about everybody else in the league.
Yeah. And it's crazy too, because when you see him, it's not like he's big and muscular and like, he's not like the strongest person. He works a lot on his speed, and he's been doing that since he's been younger, but it's also a gift that he has. He's been genetically blessed with just being fast. He's always been fast. He's always going to be fast, and he works at it a lot. And he's just smart. He knows the plays to make. He knows where to go. And then if you look at a guy like Pasta, when I played with him, he was such a good shooter that any pass that you gave him, he was so good at picking it up and getting it on net and getting it off the ice. That's what separates him, is he's gifted with having a good shot. He can, if you make him a bad pass in front of his feet, behind his feet, if it's wobbly, he's going to somehow score that goal. 99% of people won't score that goal. He can score that goal, and that's why he is as good as he is.
It's even funny to think about McDavid. So I grew up around the same area as McDavid, and we're roughly the same age. And I remember when I was in like the sixth or seventh grade, people were talking about him. Like my dad was like, yeah, we're going to go watch him play. I'm like, who is this guy? And now it's like, wow, I know who this guy is now, no doubt.
Crazy. He's a step above the rest. That's definitely for sure.
Yeah.
It's a treat to watch.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. So as you reflect on your career, just in general, what are your maybe perspectives on the mental side of hockey? Like, how important do you think it is to perhaps be mentally tough, be resilient, and just have those tools in place so that way you can handle adversities when they come about?
I think the mental side of hockey, like if you asked me that question when I was like 17, 18, I probably would have just been like the stupid kid who was like, oh, like you don't have to be mentally strong to play hockey. You just have to be like skilled or like good or something. Now that I've lived through it, this is my 9th year playing pro. Unless you're the McDavids and the Crosbys and the guys that are going to be putting up 100 points a year, the mental side of the game is probably the biggest part of it. It's what separates all the prospects. I remember when I played in Providence, like there was a lot of guys there that had a lot of skill, but it's just the mental side of things, finding that balance that works for you, having the thick skin, being able to be sat as a 20-year-old for an entire game, and then the next game having the confidence to go out and play the same game that you did. It's like that are going to separate you from the next person. Physically speaking, every player that makes it that far, they can skate well, they can hit, they're strong, they're fast. They're in the gym a lot, they're working out. It's the mental side of things that's going to separate you from the next person, and it's such a fine line, and it takes work and it takes experiences. But the most important thing, it sounds stupid, but it's worked for me, is you sometimes like have to care less. Like you have to, if something bad happens or you have a bad game, you can care about it for like a short period of time, learn the lessons and the mistakes that you made, but then you need to let it go. You need to care less about that game and just say, that's done with now. I don't care about it. I learned my lessons. I know what I need to fix. And the next game, it's about going out, having the confidence to not be thinking in the back of your mind, I don't want to play like a bad, I don't want to play a bad shift or a bad game or get sad again. Because as soon as you start doing that, that's the rabbit hole that you're going to fall down. And that's when you're going to start to lose games and lose months and lose yourself as a hockey player. And it's just the mental side of thing for me is the most important thing. It took me a decent amount of time to figure that out, but still even trying to learn on it. So it's definitely important.
I couldn't agree more about the whole acceptance piece that you just talked about, where hockey is full of mistakes, hockey is full of adversity, and there's no way to change that. So having the ability to accept your mistakes and reflect on them and then refocus and move forward, so then that way you can be the best you can be, is so important. Because if we're worrying about our mistakes, then we're going to play tense, we're going to play in fear, and ultimately that is not a recipe for letting us be the best we can be.
It's one of those things where, like, if you have the talent but you're too afraid to use it, then you're never gonna make it, right? Like, I would always rather try to make the plays that I want to make and get yelled at, and then try to correct them or try to learn from them. That's part of being young, right? Like, people are always gonna be more patient with you when you're like 19, 20, 21. So for all the young guys that are out there that are trying to make it, the worst thing that you can do is go to a team and just play it safe and be like, oh, like I'm not going to try to make the plays that I did. You have to play the same way that got you drafted and the same way that got you spotted in the first place. As soon as you start trying to change like your game and stuff like that, when you're like a young kid, your coach is going to tell you like, hey, maybe it's not the smartest thing to try that. We're leading by a goal, or maybe it's not the smartest thing to try that. And you slowly can start to learn what's acceptable, when it's acceptable, but you still need to play your game because that's the only way that you're going to move on to play at the next level or be successful. And a lot of kids, they have a hard time with that. If they make one single mistake, they're mentally screwed for the rest of the game. They go out there, they're scared, they won't try to make a play. They get the puck across the red line. Even if it's a 3-on-2, they'll just dump it to play it safe. Yeah, that's not going to hurt the team, but it's also not going to get you noticed. It's not going to get you to the next level or where you need to be. So I think that the confidence side of things and kind of believing in yourself, but also being able to get yelled at and get in trouble, learn from it, but still have the mindset that, okay, I'm going to go out. Maybe I'm not going to make that same play in the same time at the same score, but if I have a chance to make a play and it's the right play, I'm going to have to make it. So that's the best piece of advice that I can give to young kids that are coming up into the game.
Yeah, I love that. And then I guess just to finish off, and Ryan, I really, really appreciate all your time today and for sharing your story and your career. This year is going to be a weird year for a lot of young hockey players. Some players aren't really going to get a play. You know, I'm sure you've heard about the OHL, no hitting. Yeah. So what are some tips that you give to youth hockey players who may not have much of a season this year to stay productive and still try to improve on their game?
I think you need to remember that you're not the only person that's going to be in that boat. So you need to remember that you're not losing a year. There's a lot of people that aren't going to be playing. They're not going to be playing the full seasons. So you just have to put in the work with as much ice time that you get, as much games that you play in. There's no hitting. You have to make the most of it. All the guys you're playing with, they're playing the same game. They're not allowed to hit too. Work on the different parts of your game. Try to become a better player. I've always been a fan of choosing a couple things to try to work on. I just know for me in this past month, my back has been killing me for some reason. So I've been trying to work on getting my back better, being more flexible, working on my range of motion. That's all I've been focusing on the past like month. And then at the beginning of the year, it was trying to get stronger. And then it's once you start trying to focus on like, I want to become a better shooter and a better passer and a better skater, and I want to get stronger. Those are too many things to focus on at once. You have to focus on a couple of things. So in this year, take a couple of things that you're not great at, spend the time to get better, really focus on those two things. If you want to get better at shooting or passing, just take those, work on those, get better, use this time to work on those things and come back as a better player, and just have fun with it. The situation is kind of what it is, and it's the world that we live in, and got to make the most of it.
Thank you for that. And again, thank you so much for joining me today. I really, really do appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
So that wraps it up for episode 42 of the Mental Dive Podcast. Once again, shout out to Ryan Spooner for joining me. I really, really appreciate it. And as well, I really, really appreciate everybody who has listened to, I guess, what I have to say across this journey I've been on with my podcast. It's been about a year and 3 months now, I think, and I've honestly really enjoyed it. It's brought me a lot of personal growth, development, and ultimately learning from so many incredible individuals who are willing to share with me and, you know, make the time. So anybody who supported me up to this point, I just want to express my gratitude and thank you for everything, really. I would really appreciate it if any of my Apple Podcast listeners could leave me a review on the platform, whether it's giving me 1 to 5 stars, totally up to you, or leave me a written review. I would honestly really, really appreciate that. And if any of you have not been checking me out on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Taylor Staden, TaylorStaden, please shoot me a follow and check out what I got going on. I post clips and quotes from my Twitter feed, from my podcast, from other sources, and really it's just an additional means of me bringing value to my audience. But anyways, everybody, have a fantastic rest of your day, and I'm looking forward to sharing another episode with you soon. Until next time.